You and I back together again Monday, June the 24th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We ushered in the program with a discussion about the present-day Democratic Party's tone deafness, in my opinion, on immigration. Barnum Festival Executive Director Charlie Carroll dropped by to talk about the recent passing of former festival ringmaster Frank Generini and a new award that will carry on Frank's name. And finally, Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Calgill dropped by for his weekly update and a look at some news concerning the 5th District U.S. House race in Connecticut. So when I get the chance, as I did last week, to fill in for Melissa Sheketov on the world-famous Melissa in the Morning program, you know, when I shift my shift, as it were, from this here 4-hour chunk, 2 to 6 every Monday through Friday, when I move it back to mornings, which I've worked on and off for years, you know, I get to, I'm done it, you know. 10:30, 11, 11:30, make sure the guests are set for the next day, and then I go, all right, I have the whole afternoon open here, okay, I can wash the car, did that, do a little vacuuming, did that, but what I like to do on weeks that I fill in for Melissa when I get the occasional weekday afternoon available to me after the show is I like to, you know, at least once a week when I do that for Melissa, I like to, you know, have lunch with somebody. Hey, you know, I'm working mornings this week, and somebody may say, hey, that's great. Let's meet for lunch at whatever. So last week, I think it was last Thursday, I met up with one of my old radio bosses, and he hired me back in like 1997 or something like that. Anyway, he has since retired from another job, and we're, you know, once we get together, and we see each other about maybe twice a year now, 2-3 times a year maybe at the most, but usually once or twice for a early or late lunch or early dinner. A couple of older guys, and we sit and we laugh and we talk about the prospects and the problems of the world and, of course, politics. Now, if you think I'm good with politics, this buddy of mine, this friend, is just an uber political mind, discussing all kinds of issues. He's a bit of a historian as well, so if you bring up any particular president, he can give you pros and cons, what he's remembered for, what he should be forgotten for, whatever. So, of course, we lapsed into, after talking about our families and what's going on with his two grown sons and my grown son, and he just retired from a job that he had after radio. You know, we were talking about certain things with the race, and he, like me, is, you know, disgusted with the fact that we are picking from two senior citizens when we know there are, you know, numerous other good candidates on both sides of the aisle. But be that as it may, he is moved from side to side on the political spectrum, from, you know, rock rib Republican to liberal Republican to now a centrist with some Democratic leanings. But like any good person, he doesn't like to be labeled as, you know, be painted with a broad brush or a paint roller per se. So we were talking, and he is no fan of Mr. Trump, and we talked about that and laughed about it and what's good and what's bad with, you know, both candidates, but we did agree on one thing, and I'm going to play you a piece of audio here that I saw over the weekend. I actually saw an allusion to, and I said, let me go find this, because this has the capacity to be as cringeworthy as I think, and it is. I'll play that audio for you in just a second, because it's getting a lot of play today. But my friend and I were both sitting there chowing down at lunch, bemoaning the fact that to the adulation and delight of a lot of Republicans and a lot of Trump voters out there, and to the consternation and ringing with political pain that a lot of centrist Democrats have out there who would not want to see Donald Trump reelected or elected again to another term, we were both sitting there laughing and crying at the same time at the apparent blind spot that Democrats continue to have over immigration. And we were both sitting there, you know, half laughing, half crying here regarding the fact that probably the strongest issue, at least if you go by the poll numbers here, that Donald Trump has going for him is immigration and the perception. And you can say, well, the numbers show this, blah, blah, blah. If you're a crime victim, nobody gives a crap about numbers. Nobody cares. But the perception that a lot of migrants, illegals, displaced persons, whatever you want to say, asylum seekers, you know, there's been a run of very violent migrants and migrant crime and alleged crime. We'll get to that momentarily, too, as well, in the news. And we were talking, and I said, what is it about the modern day, not the Democratic Party of 20 or 30, 40 years ago, that actually had a set? But what is it? And I'm throwing this question out to you folks who are card-carrying Democrats, maybe not so much the card-carrying type, but if you sit there, do you find yourself sitting there at night watching the nightly news or watching CNN or Fox or MSNBC or hearing the newscast here on WICC, and you hear some of the stuff that comes out of the mouths from Democrats about what's a top two or three issue? And if you're a Democrat, because if you're a Republican, you're going, but if you're a Biden supporter, and maybe you don't love Biden, but you do not want to see Donald Trump do well in the debate coming up this Thursday, and if you sit there generally and say, oh, my God, we can't have Trump again, what is your reaction to, you know, when you hear absolute pablum from your side on immigration? Let me give you an example. I'm going to play this for you. And it runs a little over 2 minutes. I want you to listen to this. And if you're a, I know what you're going to say if you're a Republican. You're going to love this. If you're a Trump voter, you're going to love this audio I'm going to play here. If you're a Democrat, if you are somebody who maybe not is a Democrat, maybe you're unregistered, maybe you're an independent, an unregistered voter, but you're a centrist and tend to lean Democrat, maybe you don't want Joe Biden back in office, but my God, you hear this. How can you not cringe at this? And again, it opens up a bigger question here that I want to start with. We'll go to the phones later on at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And my friend, my old work buddy, said something that's very profound. Again, you think I'm good. He should host a show like this. His political knowledge is off the wall compared to mine. However, he said something that really crystallized it. Let me play you this bite, though. It's from the, it's about a 2-minute clip, but you'll find it interesting because of what sets up here. This is from ABC's This Week. It is, and as soon as I heard this over the weekend, I went, I gotta play this. On Monday, ABC's This Week, veteran host correspondent Martha Raddatz there. And she invites, a perceived progressive in the Senate, not a very smart woman in her area of expertise, finance and regulation and all that, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Now, if you are a Democrat, I want, well, everybody listen to this, but if you're a person that would rather not see Donald Trump win, you're just going to hear this and go, oh, my God. And I got to tell you something. Kudos to Martha Raddatz for how she asked the question, and she didn't buy the load of garbage, of crapola, of fertilizer that Elizabeth Warren was dishing out again. This is from ABC News, hardly a right-wing outlet. Martha Raddatz, ABC's This Week, over the weekend, along with the Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren on illegals.
There have been more than 6.9 million apprehensions at the southern border. Thus far, in Biden's term, there were just over 2 million in Donald Trump's entire term. What did the president do wrong?
No, this isn't about what the president did wrong. Remember, on the very first day that he was sworn into office, President Biden asked Congress both for the resources and for comprehensive immigration reform. The Republicans blocked it, blocked it, blocked it, blocked it.
Donald Trump didn't have that either, Senator. And there were 2 million during his entire term.
Until last fall, the president tries to deal with the problem that is presented to him. He can't deal with it if Congress and the Republicans continue to block him. And so the president is using the tools available to him, both to create border security, but he doesn't have the resources because the Republicans are blocking access.
But he is president. Understood. I do think you've made your point. But poll after poll, as Matt Rivers just pointed out, say that this is a very weak poll number for President Biden. Trump surpasses him by 17 points in trust and working the border.
I understand that. And I understand that the president is doing what he can with the resources available to him. But you know as well as I do that he can't manufacture more judges. He can't manufacture more guards if Congress doesn't give him the resources to do that. You know, the president is out there doing everything he can, not just at the border, but overall for families. And the action he took in this last week is exactly Joe Biden being Joe Biden. Think for just a minute about what it means for 500,000 families that little kids go off to school in the morning and they don't have to worry about whether or not mom or dad is still going to be part of their family when they get home.
And what about what about the border that you were so concerned about a couple of weeks ago? I the first question I ask you, are you less concerned now?
No.
Hey, you know what? Kudos to Martha Raddatz. Now, the only reason that ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and MSNBC are starting to do more on the border and are starting to be as aggressive as Martha Raddatz was there, you know why? They're all sitting there going, holy crap, Trump may win. And please, Senator Warren, ma'am, with all due respect to your position, stop with, well, you know, my God, she comes over. I call her the nun. Now, you have to understand. Yes, Sister Warren. Oh, my God. How pedantic can you be? Well, Joe Biden doesn't have this. Donald Trump didn't have it either. And that's what Martha Raddatz was trying to say there. And she's saying, Senator, all things being equal, Trump didn't have a border bill or any more judges or anything like that. Oh, my God. But you folks out there who don't want Donald Trump elected again, and I still think Biden wins, but are you getting agita on this? What is it with your party or the side of the aisle you tend to lean onto? Why are they just shoveling out garbage? Pure, unadulterated garbage when it comes to immigration. Why is it, for people on the left, a sacrament? You know, like communion and baptism and reconciliation. It's a sacrament for these people. Illegal immigration. It is mind-boggling. And, oh, my God, that 2 minutes and 19 seconds there I played of Elizabeth Warren, that should make your hair hurt. You know, we do a lot here. We keep you in contact here at Connoisseur with the folks from the Barnum Festival in to and through Bridgeport. Got some sad news to tell you about. Charlie Carroll joins us right now. He's the executive director of the Barnum Festival, and we have word that a past guest of this show and a past ringmaster, Frank Generini, passed away recently, and there's now being something done in his honor to remember him. Charlie, hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul.
So thanks for joining us. So I did not know, and I had Frank on a couple of times a few years ago, but he passed recently, right?
Yeah, Frank had a long battle with cancer, and he passed on this past Saturday. You know, a profoundly sad day for his wife, Cynthia, and his family, and certainly for all of us in the Barnum Festival. And there's so many lives and organizations that Frank touched.
Yeah, I wanted to go into that before we talk about the festival, what's going on, and how we're going to memorialize Frank. Yeah, I remember talking to him, and he had an amazing resume, both in business and then in helping folks around here, right?
He did. Frank touched a lot of people. He was a very generous guy. He was a a kind spirit. You couldn't be around Frank Generini and not be laughing, no matter what the situation was. Frank figured out how to make light of it, and he certainly enjoyed life.
Absolutely. So what is the Barnum Festival doing now, Charlie, to remember Frank?
Well, you know, we're into the midst of the last week of the festival, and Frank was the ultimate volunteer. I mean, he did every job in this festival, small and large. He was a board member. He was president of the festival, and as you mentioned, he was ringmaster. And that only Frank could do it would be for 3 years through COVID. But when I had the honor of being the ringmaster in 1999, ringmasters get to pick their volunteer of the year. Mm-hmm. And back in 1999, I chose Frank Generini, and for all the things that he did to help me. And that went on for the next 25 years with Frank doing things. So we at the festival are going to rename our Volunteer of the Year Award will now be known as the Frank T. Generini Volunteer of the Year Award.
Outstanding. And obviously this will help carry on Frank's legacy, not just with his family life and the life he led around the area, but also with the Barnum Festival, which had to be scaled back, as you mentioned, Charlie, all throughout COVID, but came out strong after that.
It did. And it was Frank's leadership, that kept everybody together through that most difficult time. As you know, as he was ringmaster, as we say, from 20 to 21 to 22. I told him he had to keep doing it till he got it right. But he just kept everybody together. He kept the spirit up. He said, you know, when the time's right, we're going to do this, and we did. And as you pointed out, we did come out of it, and we came out of it strong. And we're going to have another great festival this year. And Frank was definitely a part of the planning of this one right up until when I spoke to him on Wednesday. He was still giving me things to do. So we're not going to forget Frank.
It really is a shock, and I've had that happen in my personal life and here in my radio life, Charlie, where, you know, it's sad when somebody has a decline where, you know, they really get ravaged by something and they're out of it for months and then they pass away. But you just mentioned having spoken to Frank, and I've had people here in the radio business that I spoke to, and then 3 or 4 days later, somebody said, well, you know, they're gone. And you say to yourself, well, how can that be? I just spoke to him the other day. But it really is a gut check on life, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, we all, you know, life is short. But Frank, you know, Paul never complained, never said, why me? And for several years, you know, they had told him there was no more treatments for him. And he made it very clear to his family and to myself, and certainly with his wife, they did a lot of things. He and Cynthia didn't miss a restaurant, didn't miss a weekend away or anything, while Frank was still able to do that. And when it, you know, started to catch up on him, so to speak, you know, he held court in his house, and the visitors just kept coming and going. You know, he called me last Tuesday to tell me he was in the hospital, which I knew, and he told me how much parking was available. So in other words, get in the car and come out here, which my wife Lisa and I did. We drove out there and we just picked up in the hospital room where it left off. In fact, Frank had so much company in the ICU unit, they had to move his room and put him at the end. So it wouldn't bother other people.
Yeah, I mean, and I've known people like that, Charlie, and relatives who say, listen, while I'm still here, I'm still here, and it doesn't mean I'm going to sit and look at the four walls. Before we wrap this up, Charlie, you said what the festival is winding down for this go-round. How things gone so far, and what are we looking at for the year ahead?
We've had a great year. Our ringmaster, Dr. Camille Lawrence, has done a wonderful job. We have coming up this week the fireworks on Friday night, our drum corps show Saturday night, and it's Shelton High, and then on Sunday's the Great Street Parade in Bridgeport. So it'll keep us busy in this time, and it'll keep us, all of us will be together, obviously, and we'll be talking about Frank and the many things that we did over the years.
All right. Frank Generini will be remembered by the folks at the Barnum Festival with a Volunteer of the Year Award. That's great. I remember having Frank on the show a couple of times, and he was a wonderful guest. Barnum Festival Executive Director Charlie Carroll. Charlie, thank you, and to all you folks, you men and women connected with the Barnum Festival, from all of us here at Connoisseur Media, our deepest sympathies, and please extend that to Frank's friends and family members. We'll keep him in our memory, and stay close, stay in touch. You have the number, so whatever happens with the upcoming Barnum Festival, and let us know who wins that first award. We'll be glad to chat again, Charlie, okay?
Paul, thank you so much for the time.
Not a problem. Thank you, Charlie. Be good. Take care. Drive safely. Charlie Carroll, the executive director of the Barnum Festival there, talking about the recent passing of former festival ringmaster Frank Generini and a new award that carries Frank's name. And Frank was on this program a couple of times. I think I look back at my guest registry, 2019, 2020, and thereabouts. Every Monday this time, about a quarter past the hour of 5, Terry Cowgill joins us from the Connecticut News Junkie and Substack.com. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir. Are you still basking in the glow of the Boston Celtics' 18th World Championship? Are you still smiling?
I am. I still am. I don't know what's going to happen next year. That's that's the big, you know, because we Celtics fans are just notorious bedwetters. You know, we can never be satisfied that we have a great team. You know, I don't think anything will measure up to that 86 team.
Yeah,
but this is really a great team, and they've signed their two biggest stars to long term contracts.
Yeah,
so I think that they have a good, you know. Problem is Porzingis is just so brittle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but you're right about the weeping. You know, I was telling Celtics fans, oh, my God. I said, relax. Nobody's beating you four times in the seven-game series.
Yes.
It's just not going to happen. Yeah, I mean,
right.
I mean, sometimes, Terry, the answer is right in front of your face. It's the best team in the NBA by far, and it's not even close.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will add, I did hear what you said about Martha Raddatz and Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
And I did see the show.
Oh.
And at the very end, Martha was about to nail her with a really good question.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Warren pointed to her earpiece. Oh, I can't hear
can't
you.
Can't hear you. No. Testing. Testing. One, two, three. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God.
It's the oldest dodge in the book.
Oh, my God.
You got it done.
Excuse me, Martha, did you say anything? See, that's what we love about radio, Terry, and the telephone. Never happens here. Before we get to what may happen with one of America's premier prestige newspapers, something going on in the 5th District, and already this district is like 2 years ago, Terry. Pretty much the only shot for Connecticut to send a Republican to Congress, and both major parties are watching what's going on here between George Logan and Johanna Hayes.
Yeah, you know, and I just recently drew attention to something that I read a couple of days ago because I had actually forgotten about it. But I cracked open my Republican American newspaper, and I read this story by my old friend and colleague Ruth Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
They had a meet and greet of you know, Republican candidates, and
sure,
especially George Logan in the mm-hmm. 5th. At the Fife and Drum, which is a venerable restaurant in Kent where James Cagney could be seen from time to time,
wow,
believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I got to this sentence, and Ruth wrote, she said, then after telling those in the audience to shut their shut down their phones and cameras, Logan loudly announced that he voted for Donald Trump twice and plans to vote for the Republican nominee again in November.
Okay.
And I remember thinking to myself, what? He wanted everybody to shut down their phones and then basically said to the crowd, psst, I voted for Trump twice and I'm going to vote for him again. What is up with that? I mean, that's just so bizarre. You know, I've been in public meetings,
sure,
every now and then, small ones in small towns, where an official will say something during a public meeting,
mm-hmm,
and say, they'll look at me and say, oh, that was off the record. You know, I'm like,
no, no, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
No.
And you can't really do that. It just was. So I remembered it today and I put it up on Twitter and it's sort of going viral.
Wow.
It's all over the place now. And I'm sure that the Hayes campaign will pick up on it, too. But it just gives them a talking point to say, ha, See, he is a Trump guy after all. He doesn't want, to say it in polite company, but he is.
Well, you know, and Terry, I've worked on a few campaigns long, long time ago. And now this was, you know, when I was on those campaigns, the era of the smartphone with video capability was finally coming in. Yes, I'm an old guy like a lot of people here. And look, there are some things, Terry, you can't run away from. And it's not like, now people would say he has fringe beliefs, but this is not like Donald Trump is a guy who's going to get 10-12%. You know, this is not Harold Stassen. This is not John Anderson. This is not the Ross Perot and that big sucking sound. This is the standard bearer of the Republican Party. What do you expect a Republican to say? I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I agree. And as I wrote, there was nothing inherently wrong. I mean, I don't like Donald Trump personally. There's nothing inherently wrong with voting for him.
Mm-hmm.
I got friends and relatives. I know my son voted for him.
Okay.
Many of them just voted for him out of frustration. But to pull that kind of stunt, it's just a rookie move, you know. And Logan looks like a good candidate on paper. But it's just been one rookie mistake after another since he announced, more than 2 years ago. And I really like to see some strong competition for Johanna Hayes, because I think she's been lacking in many ways. But I don't think we have it, and I would be very surprised at this point if he won.
Yeah, 1.5 last time, so we'll see. Your thoughts on this whole Ten Commandments thing in Louisiana. And somebody asked me about this, Terry, and I said, all right, well, let's see what the courts say. And that sounds like what the governor said down there, Jeff Landry. Hey, come on and sue us. So it's going to be interesting. Grab the popcorn.
Yeah, I know. You know, and as I was telling another person I was talking to today on the phone, you know, I'm taking great care not to covet my neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant.
His male servant.
Or his donkey, because that's all right there in the Ten Commandments. And I assume it's going to be right there in the classroom.
Yeah, yeah.
These folks in Louisiana, in fact, the governor of Louisiana, I believe his name is Landry.
Yeah.
He basically said, hit me with a lawsuit.
Bring it. That's what he said. Bring
it.
Yeah.
Bring it on. Yeah. So that's what they're looking for. And it's much the same strategy that got Roe versus Wade overturned, because there were several states that began enacting, I would say, severe limitations on abortion, hoping to provoke lawsuits. And they figured they had a friendly Supreme Court that would back them up. And they were right. And in this case, they could be right about the Ten Commandments, but I don't really know. You know, I told people later, I went to an Episcopal boarding school for 5 years.
Yeah, you
graduated
told me.
From it.
Yep.
The headmaster was an Episcopal priest. I don't recall ever seeing the Ten Commandments up on the wall of any classroom.
Interesting.
And I just don't know why it's necessary. If you're going to have the Ten Commandments up there, then have a copy of the First Amendment right next to it.
Why not?
Freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly. It's all there. It's at least as foundational as the Ten Commandments,
and
less silly.
Yeah, and you know, Terry, I would put the Ten Commandments up there. I'd put the Declaration of Independence. I'd put the Bill of Rights. I would put whatever precepts there are, and forgive me, I have many Jewish friends who could tell me, but the precepts of Judaism, of Islam, of Shinto, of Buddhism. I mean, why not? You know, it can't hurt for kids to read all those. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. I think those should all be covered in history classes. But we don't want to get it to a point where it appears that the government is endorsing one religion over another. And it's kind of a tough line to walk, but you don't want to stray too far from neutrality. And that's what I fear Louisiana is gunning for.
And Yeah, and finally, Terry, I want to touch on something that you and I have been following and exchanging notes on. You are primarily a print journalist. I've done print on and off for years. You know, America pretty much has three marquee newspapers, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post. But, man, the situation that you and I have been watching as journalists with the Washington Post where, you know, they're talking about budget cuts and a bunch of Brits coming in. And I guess one of the editors, distilled it down. And it's not particular to the Post, Terry, but we're bleeding money here because I think he said nobody is reading your stuff. And that's a problem now for print.
Yeah, it's a problem for print and even online. I mean, the number of subscribers has gone way down since the Trump years when interest in the Washington Post really exploded. Trump has been great for the news business, I must say. There's no question about it. But, yes, they lost on the order of $77 million last year.
Wow.
This piece that you sent to me listed a real dozen potential buyers. Mm-hmm. I don't really know who they are. I mean, I know who some of them are, obviously. I don't know how interested they would be. But, you know, I think we discussed this in one of our online exchanges, but I think the best thing to do would be to go back to being more of a regional newspaper, right? Because Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, when they broke Watergate, they were reporters on the Metro desk.
Yes.
A lot of people forget that. But they were assigned to cover things in the Washington, D.C. area. And so they were assigned the Watergate break-in because basically it was a burglary in a hotel.
Bad burglary. So, go cover it. Go talk to the cops. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, you know, they got all involved in it and stuff. And I would love to see them go back to that. And, you know, one of my mentors when I started out in journalism was the late Bob Easterbrook, who was the he and his wife bought the Lakeville Journal here in the early 70s after Bob had spent a long time at the Washington Post as a chief diplomatic correspondent and editorial page editor.
Wow.
And I was so lucky to have him as a resource. Oh,
the stories you must have heard, Terry. Oh my God.
I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, and I mean, he had met all kinds. He had met John Kennedy. He shared a cab with John Kennedy, and Kennedy stiffed him for the cab fare. Now, how about that?
Great stuff. Folks, read his stuff in the Connecticut News Junkie and on Substack.com. It's red meat for mushy moderates. A guy that is glowing about his Celtics, and if you're a cab or an Uber driver, don't worry, he won't stiff you. Terry Cowgill. Terry, take care, my friend. Have a good week.
All right, you too, Paul.
All right, thanks. There you go. So what did we learn today from Terry Cowgill? JFK once shared a cab with his boss, and JFK stiffed him out of the tip.